कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा, कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे। I would like to thank the organizers for allowing me to speak here. I'll be brief. We don't have much time. 1 o'clock we have to start Harti. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked by a person, there are so many temples in India. Why do you want one more? So Srila Prabhupada said to that person, do you like children? He said, yes. Are you married? He said, yes. Do you have children? He said, yes. So there are so many children loitering in the streets of India, but you chose to have your own. You love children, you might feed poor kids, sometimes you might give in charity, but you like to have your own. So similarly, we also like to help whoever wants to receive that help, but we also prefer to have our temples. Now of course, there is a big negative attitude towards temples, feeling that especially in the youth of India, people have notion that these are commercial enterprises, they are used to just line somebody's pockets. It's an excuse for non-productive people to just take shelter of a temple. All this is true. All this is a fact. These are the signs of Kali Yuga. Still Prabhupada, right from the first two speakers, His Grace Gaurang Prabhu, His Grace Krishnachandra Prabhu, and then we read the seven purposes of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada gave a very clear understanding. Anyone remembers why Srila Prabhupada established temples? How does he describe them? Vaikuntha is one answer, but in the seven purposes. Holy place, something more? Spiritual and cultural embassies, yes, that's true. Something more? Come together and associate. Very correct. Still something is remaining. It's a hospital, yes. It's a university, correct. It's a place dedicated to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna. Check it up in your seven purposes. These seven purposes, they are so obvious that we miss them. Prabhupada was very clear as to why these temples need to be established. What is the purpose? You're all correct. But his words were, a place dedicated to the pastimes of Krishna. I'll begin with my discussion is about in two parts. One is a very inspiring quote from the third canto, first chapter, and this happens with one great Mahajan, Vidura. So we'll discuss that, and finally I would like to take some inventory of my own life so far and would like to express some words of gratitude. So this is the part of the Mahabharata where Vidura is being such bitter words, such angry words are used by Duryodhan that how dare this Dasiputra give counseling, give advice to us. We are the rulers. Just don't kill him. Just leave his breath, that's all. And when Vidura hears that, he says, enough. He is practically like a prime minister under Dhritarashtra. He gives him guidance. But Dhritarashtra, no avail. He has never accepted Vidura's guidance. He later accepts, but not now. So he removes his crown, his royal insignia, whatever, and he keeps his bow and arrow on the doorstep of his home. The Bhagavatam describes, what is Vidura's home? It's a place where Krishna would come unannounced. Any time of the day, any time Krishna would come. That was the intimacy between Vidura, his wife, and therefore we have this famous thing, Rukha Sakha Vidur Ghar Khayo, Duryodhan Ka Bhog Na Khayo. It's not a easy thing that you have a place where Krishna just comes unannounced. He just says, I felt like coming. Now, to leave such a dwelling is not an easy thing. But Vidura was thinking, now my time is up. I need to move along. Something else is happening. The kind of treatment I am getting here from the hands of people like Duryodhan, Shakuni, Karna, Dushasan, it's impossible. The explanation is given that keeping the bow and arrow on the door means I want you on fight. And Vidura did not fight for any party. He just left. And what did he do? Vidura was, in one of Prabhupada's explanations, he was Krishna's GBC. And tired of administrative duties, paperwork, carrying, you know, thick key bunches. You know why people like to be called a key person? That means if something has to be opened, that guy has to be there. Otherwise, whether it is a washroom or whether it is a treasury, it can't be opened. The key person has to be there. So, I don't know, but I've heard that mother-in-laws, forgive me if it is not true, but they keep that key bunch with them. So when she walks, you can hear that chuck chuck. That means, you know, this person is important in this household. So Vidura had seen everything, been there, done that, finished. And therefore no more working as Yamaraj, no more giving heavy sentences to anyone. Now he was free. He was just free to do what? He had a long holiday, that's what he wanted. So he went and visited, the Bhagavatam describes so many holy places. He first of all took the garb of a Bairagi, that royal robes and everything. Although he was a Dasiputra, he used to wear proper silk attire. He gave it up. No crown, hair grown like anything. And then he would go from one place to another. In fact, it is explained that his hair would always be wet, clothes always would be wet. Because he would take bath in one kund, get up, there is another one next there. He would take bath there, again take bath somewhere else, eating if it is available somewhere, some Mahaprasad, otherwise even that also is not required. And always remembering Krishna's pastimes. So this is third canto, first chapter, 18th verse. Pureshu punyo pavanadri kunjeshu apankato yeshu sarit sareshu anantalingai samalankriteshu chacharatirthayataneshu nanyam. Ananta Lingai. Just like we say Shiva Linga means a temple. So Ananta Lingai is a temple for the Supreme Lord Ananta. These temples were existing at least, Prabhupada is speaking in the letter purport 3.1.23. How dare somebody say that in Vedic India there were no temples? These temples are existing, and the temples which Vidura visited were all Prachin. Isn't it? You go to a temple, it says Prachin, especially if it is a Parikramasthal, they say, if you don't go by this tree, your Parikrama is useless. And that tree is bang in, right in your own way. So anyway, so Prachin, this Vidura visited those temples which were always there. A post box, I'm sorry, most of the people here could have heard of a post box, and the youngsters, they only know their inbox. But the example is quite apt. So, not an app, but apt. You put your envelope or a letter in a post box. I used to do it so much. I have some fond memories of writing letters and waiting for the postman to come. All those days are gone now. No postman, and it's just your thing saying that, like yesterday, not yesterday, last fortnight, some of our brahmacharis, just while going to rest, he saw his mobile, 63 WhatsApp messages unread. He said, what am I going to do with them? If I get up tomorrow morning, it will be 128 messages waiting for you to be read. And most of them are not so useful anyway. So we have made it very trivial, but the point is, the post box, you put your letter there, and when you get a confirmation, when you get a letter from your friend that, you know, oh, nice to have your letter, I am hale and hearty, I'll be visiting soon or whatever, you know this post box works. It is not just any box. Anybody can put a box and say that, you know, this also looks like a post box. The principle which Prabhupada wants to emphasize is, the post box which is authorized has the potency of the postal system behind it. The post box, Prabhupada writes here, the Archa Murti can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when He is personally present. So we've all gathered here not to worship a stone. We might say this marble stone looks like Krishna. It is Krishna. How? The analogy of the post box and the postal system. So, this is the direct founder Acharya Uvacha. Prabhupada is guaranteeing here. As Krishna was personally present here and as is unlimitedly powerful, similar is the potency of a Archa Murti. I was glancing through Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's biography, Atma Charita, written by Bhakti Vikas Maharaj. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur used to mention the process of worshipping the deity as not as Archa Seva or Murti Seva or Murti Puja. Murti Puja is a favorite abuse word which intellectuals always flaunt around, that you people engage in Murti Puja or you are idol worshippers. He used to call it Nitya Prakata Seva. It is Nitya Seva. Krishna is worshipped all the time. Thousands and millions of Lakshmis are eager to serve Him. Lakshmi Sahasrashata Sambrahma Sevyamanam. They are eager to serve Him. That service is already, it's always going on in the spiritual world. It is Nitya. But for you and me, it becomes Prakat here. So deity worship is called Nitya Prakata Seva. So therefore, Vidura, when he, in the next verse, this is 3.1.23, Anyani Chehadvija Deva Devai Kritani Nana Yatanani Vishnu Pratyanga Mukhyankita Mandirani Yad Darshanat Krishna Manusmaranti. In this 3.1.23, Prabhupada explains, who establishes temples? We have cases where some families have started a temple and they say this is that particular family's temple. But the Vedic system is Dvija Deva Devai. It is the demigods or people who are in this world, qualified brahmanas, purified men who are thoroughly honest, as Prabhupada described the sadhus, they are the ones who establish temples. It is in Kali Yuga that you may have seen some group of people without any job or whatever, or those who would be using these temples for nefarious purposes. But the original purpose is Kritani. They are the ones who establish temples. For what? Temples marked by symbols of the Lord remind people of Krishna. Krishna is called Chakri. He has a chakra. But Vishnu has all four. Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. Krishna has only one chakra. He is the origin of all Vishnus. So, the big emblems on a temple, we don't have this was a dance hall for a Nawab. This was a playground for some kids. When I came here in 98, you know those firecrackers which go like a chakra on the floor and they leave marks on the floor. So right in the, just below this big chandelier, there was a big mark of people who had killed children who had burst firecrackers in this hall. In Chicago, it was a gym. Somewhere it was a godown. So Prabhupada, he came here. He didn't have properly established temples wherever he went. The urgency was to begin it somewhere. In fact, ISKCON was more or less like a field hospital. Army field hospital, there is a war going on. So that time, sometimes there is no anesthesia. So, I've heard, sometimes they just give one blow and knock the fellow unconscious. He's already half dead because of being injured. But the point is not to give him a slow, steady anesthesia. The point is to give him that medicine which to save his life. Save his life is more important. Saving one limb gone here and there. As I say, kya kare? It's a war, it's a battlefield. So Prabhupada, there is a chapter in the Lilamrit where Satsurup Maharaj and his team, they gave such a nice name. Taking on all comers. Whoever you are standing at the door of an ISKCON temple and you are asking, can I come in? Welcome. In many places, it's like, well, come. If you have the pass, if you have the money, or if you have the proper card or something, then you are welcome. But Prabhupada was welcome. Whoever comes. And therefore, the mission of Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, they had a system. You find all these Gaudiya mission temples, the Mridanga style spires and one spire in between. That was the original idea for all temples. Prabhupada didn't have the luxury. He simply didn't have the luxury for all these things. So whatever temple, whatever corner of the world was available to him, he established a temple. Many times people say, your deities are Dakshin Mukhi or Purva Mukhi, or we say, rather than what Mukhi they are, Prabhupada is teaching us whether our Mukh is towards their lotus feet. That is more important than whether they are seeing this particular direction or that particular direction. A temple is also on a high ground. You see Babulnath here. one lady was doing some research and she said this place was known as Girigram previously. So then it became blunt and it became Girgaon. Actually, it's Girigram. What is the Giri? Giri was a small hillock here. And on that hillock, Babulnath Ji was established. So that is the original idea in India. A very high ground is chosen for a temple. So that from anywhere, Panchakrosh, wherever you are, you can take darshan. Of course, now Babulnath also is dwarfed by skyscraper dwellings. So when man decides to show God that, you know, I am staying higher than you, then he becomes more lower in his actions. That's everywhere in the Western world especially, such competition for building higher, higher, higher. But then we find our values are going lower and lower. So a temple is important for that revival. And that's why we are all here. I was surprised that how wrong Krishna Chandra Prabhu was when he said sometimes the brahmacharis take inspiration from the grihasthas also. I was listening and I said, Prabhu, you are wrong. It's all the time. In fact, I'll share some small events, small snippets. Radhanath Maharaj gave us a culture of even definitions. This is not like, not his style where he would just call everybody and say, okay, from today, this is the culture, or from tomorrow, that is what I want. It was some remark passed offhand sometimes after prasad, after a festival, but when you use them in your life, you find them, they are so valuable. He said there should be no distinction between ashram devotees and congregation devotees. I am born and brought up in Mumbai, but I visited Ras Bihari temple after I joined Radha Gopinath. All these years somehow there was no yoga to go, and it was generally known that devotees means those who stay in the temple and the congregation is those who stay outside. And nobody's fault. I'm not trying to say one is better than the other. Her Grace Urmila Mataji was here and she said, this is the late 70s. Somebody asked a question, what are the three modes? And how does one understand which mode we are in? Whether it is mode of goodness, passion or ignorance. She said in the 70s our answer was very clear. Everybody is staying in the temple, transcendental. Everybody is staying next to the temple, goodness. Two blocks away from the temple, passionate. And everybody else in ignorance. So just imagine a society which was having that kind of confidence that those who stay inside are the only ones who are transcendental, and Maharaj to come and say that no, there should not be this kind of discrimination that they are the congregation and we are the devotees. That was lesson number one. Two devotees from either Europe or America, they had come here, and that time Muralidhar Prabhu, Adikeshwar Prabhu, I think that was like a turning point in the development of our temple. These devotees started taking things seriously. Many are there. I'm just taking two or three names because just for that record. Their involvement was so valuable that you see the Utsav Murthy, Radha Gopinath, Radha Vrindavan, Radha Gopijan Vallabh. Previously they had no name and they were much smaller. And we had a discussion whether some of us were feeling, Maharaj, we should reward devotees like Muralidhar Prabhu or Adikeshwar Prabhu by giving them these deities. as such, we are going to get new ones which are taller. So we said, yeah, it's a good idea. We can give them, and it will be like a reward for services rendered or like a recognition. And immediately he said, no, we won't give them. If they engage in their home deity worship, they won't come here. And so many people get inspired just by seeing them. That was another point of wisdom, that the cooperation between the grihastha ashram and the brahmacharya ashram has to be so thick, has to be so intertwined with friendship, with a cooperative attitude, with free sharing of emotions. I have never seen this anywhere. In fact, I was never even expecting this in a temple. So many years ago, I had shared a small story. Some of you might have heard it, but I am still inspired to repeat it. There was this factory, and this factory had a very, very punctual timekeeper. This person would, the shift which would end at 5:30, it would exactly end at 5:30, no matter what. And people would praise this person's punctuality. So, the inside story was, the person who would be doing that would depend on a watchmaker, a clock and watch seller just opposite the factory. And every day at 5:25, he would pass that shop. So the clockmaker was thinking, if this man is coming, that means it must be 5:25. And when he would go through that shop, he would look at the clocks there, they would be saying 5:25. So this employee, the one in charge of blowing the horn or whatever, the signal for giving the end of the shift, he would adjust his clock, his wristwatch accordingly. This went on for decades. And one day when this employee retired, he thanked the clockmaker for putting all his clocks in such order. And when the clockmaker heard about it, he said, but I set according to his movements. It's a small story I must have read in Reader Digest or some kind of magazine like that. And it inspired me to think that this is what is happening here. Rather than one community or one part of the temple's community thinking, we build this temple. No. In fact, one day Maharaj told me, but there is somebody else also, he said, none of you brahmacharis are responsible for this opulence. The grihasthas have given it. In fact, some of our devotees were complaining, there's too much opulence here. Of course, we were not complaining of the opulence. We were complaining about the sound of these marble cutting machines and all that, there was a phase of a time which we were really praying that, you know, if Vishwakarma makes things fatafat, at least we would get a good night's rest or something. And Maharaj has his particular way of doing things. He would like some things to tear it down, make something better. So although we knew things were going for becoming better, 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 like these sound system boxes, the first ones were simple rectangular boxes. And then a decorative one came. So he said, let's have 10 of them. I think there are 10, 11, 12 of them. So I said, why so many? He said, they look nice. At one point of time, there were only two of them, and both had a speaker inside them. So now they are just there for decoration. So we never knew, at least I could never fathom the kind of satisfaction Maharaj wanted of making things as gorgeous, as beautiful for the pleasure of Radha Gopinath. And he said, you guys sleep just next door, right? We use this Gopalji hall for night rest, you also use this hall, by the way. But most of us are in that hall. So he said, make sure not a drop of opulence trickles through the gap in the door and touches that brahmachari ashram over there. This opulence is only for the pleasure of Radha Gopinath. To end my gratitude for the grihasthas in our community here, we are all returning from a 4-day retreat in Rishikesh. We had the Gangaji, her merciful waters to bathe in, lofty mountains to compare our size with them, understand how tiny we are. We say we are a tiny spirit soul, but even with a gross body, you are tinier than 1/10,000 in front of one small Himalayan mountain. And there we have the entire Nitya Prakata Seva, deity worship, taken care by the Grihasthas. In most temple models, I'll call it like that, the mindset of the managers is just have a team of pujaris, that's all. They will do all the pujari seva. A team of book distributors, a team of preachers, a team of cleaners, a team of writers, editors, translators. Maharaj had this wisdom right from the beginning. At least in the ashram he said, no specialists. We shouldn't have anybody who's a specialist. Train people in as many things as possible. So, here we have an example of like 5 days, 7 days, none of the brahmachari worshippers are here, but Radha Gopinath's Nitya Prakat Seva is going on. This is the strength. And finally, to quote His Grace Krishnachandra Prabhu again, the credit which we add is very minuscule. All we can add is very small. But the harm we can do is not commensurate with our good qualities. That is much more. I take it as a reminder for me and all our ashram devotees here. All the faith that you people have, the grihasthas have put as in us, we hope that in the years to come, we also know, understand our responsibility and pray at the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath that let this sweet atmosphere of parasparavalamban, both depend on each other for inspiration, for strength. This mood, if we carefully guard, I'm sure Srila Prabhupada would be very pleased. Maharaj always reminds us, it's not like we are the best community or we are the best congregation or we are the best temple or whatever. In fact, I was just on the way, I was thinking, once I had asked Maharaj, what if Radha Gopinath temple distributes 100,000 Bhagavad Gitas in the month of December? For me, I have seen the scores beginning. I had taken charge of the book department. There were 29 Gitas sold in 1 year. It was 1988 ending. So you can imagine where we were. Of course, cassettes and other things were sold in much larger quantities at that time. So 100,000 was a big thing. But Maharaj, as he is, he said, pray to Gopinath for success. That let our temple distribute 100,000 and then add another prayer and we should come last. So I said, why? I mean, part of the glory is to come first. Anyway, I don't think I prayed for the last part, but he prayed, and from that time somehow we are managing 100,000 plus, and in the big temple category in India we are coming last. So this is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Your personal desires are fulfilled, but Krishna also arranges that you remain humble. So Juhu distributes more than 2.5 lakhs, and Delhi distributes more than 5 lakhs, 6 lakhs. So the urge to defeat somebody nominally, like a very, Kshudra Buddhi, it's a sign of a very narrow mindset, that whether the great person is served properly or not, but I want to defeat this person in front of me. That's a very narrow mindset. So, as it was in the beginning, as it was in the middle, and as it is continuing now, Radha Gopinath temple is actually run on the prayers of Radhanath Maharaj. Other devotees are also contributing, but at the same time, we need to understand how carefully he has put his blood, sweat, toil, tears, and we hope that we get a chance to serve him and through him Srila Prabhupada's mission in the future also. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Shamanand Prabhu, for sticking to the time and sharing the essence. Of course, there is so much of wisdom that we have received in the Brahmachari classes and through his lectures and through interactions with Maharaj. It may take a long time to share, but